Listen to Lisa while you're at work. WICC600.com. Back to the Lisa Wexler Show on WICC 600.
And welcome back to the show. Good morning, 203-333-9422. Joining us right now is an absolutely award-winning, brilliant journalist named Alec McGillis. The book is called Fulfillment, Winning and Losing in One-Click America. We all know what One-Click America means. It's obviously Amazon. Alec McGillis is a senior reporter for ProPublica and the recipient of a George Polk Award, the Toner Prize for Excellence in Political Reporting, and other honors. He has worked for the Washington Post, the Baltimore Sun, and he lives in Baltimore, which is one of my favorite cities of all time because I'm a Johns Hopkins graduate. Alec, welcome to the Lisa Wexler Show. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So are you anywhere near the Homewood campus?
I am, actually. I'm about a 10-minute bike ride from there. I'll be riding by there later today on my way to the office.
That's very nice. Have you visited Sherwood Gardens right about now? It's one of the prettiest places in Baltimore every spring.
Yes.
I made it a must.
Coming to peak.
Right?
Coming to peak.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
They're incredible. Those tulips are coming out. One of the things I always look forward to in the spring. So, Alec, you've written this book, Fulfillment, Winning and Losing in One-Click America, and your book is a wide-ranging, deep look at the disruptive impact of Amazon. Where do you want to begin with this, Alec? Because there's a lot of places we begin. Go ahead. Let's begin.
I would probably just begin where I began with a book, which is actually not even with Amazon itself, but with this problem of regional disparities around the country, these growing gaps that we've seen in our country between sort of a small set of winner-take-all cities like Boston, New York, D.C., Seattle, San Francisco, cities that have just become increasingly expensive and sort of hyper-prosperous in the sort of tech economy that we have now, and then a larger group of sort of left-behind cities and towns that have really been struggling, and that gap has been growing for years. It's very unhealthy. It's not good for people in either sets of places, really. And I wanted to write about that. And I came around to, after a lot of thinking about how to attack this, I decided to use Amazon as the frame to tell that story.
Well, how does Amazon as a company, how does it leech from what you describe as the Midwest and the heartland of America and have that wealth flow through to the coast and the cities? How does Amazon do that?
It does that in a very crudely. We used to have all this in the retail industry. Used to have all this business activity, all this commerce that was kind of spread all around the country in mom and pop stores all the way up to department stores, regional department stores, all that, and it was spread all around. And you had some companies based in some cities and some based in others, and it stores like the Bon Ton department store that I focused on in the book that was based in a small city in Pennsylvania, York, Pennsylvania, and spread around the Northeast and the Midwest. You had a couple of them in New England. And then as we sort of move into the e-commerce world, as you have one company that comes to dominate that e-commerce realm, now has almost half of all e-commerce business is now dominated, controlled by Amazon. All that retail activity, or a whole lot of it, is now flowing to a single city, Seattle, which is now home to 45,000 Amazon headquarters jobs, and has been transformed into a just incredibly fancy, expensive city that is dealing with all sorts of problems of homelessness and displacement and unaffordability. And so that, in a very basic level, that's how it happens. It's also, it has happened, of course, in other realms like media, where you used to have all this media ad revenue that was spread all around the country, local newspapers, local radio and TV.
That's true.
And it's now, sure, now flows to Silicon Valley because Google and Facebook, which are based in the Bay Area, control 60% of all digital ad revenue. So same thing happens in that sector. And you end up with these hyper-prosperous, winner-take-all cities, and then all this, these other swaths of the country that are basically stripped of all that kind of revenue.
Well, Amazon would argue that it's created a million jobs, that it's taken over places and converted them into fulfillment warehouses where these cities have been leached of other kinds of industries, more hard industrial manufacturing industries, and that they've at least been able to provide a base pay for relatively unskilled workers in places and towns where other traditional manufacturing had left a long time ago, having nothing to do with Amazon.
That is one thing that they argue, and I spoke with them at length for this book. I would note a couple things in response to that. One is that these new jobs, these hundreds of thousands of new jobs that they have created in the warehouses are in some sense replacing hundreds of thousands of other jobs that have vanished, namely retail jobs, brick and mortar retail jobs. Brick and mortar retail has been, you know, just wiped out in recent years. The job of the retail salesperson, sales clerk has basically been the hardest hit job of any in the country. And so in a sense, you have workers that jobs used to be consist of a retail sales clerk or, you know, a stocker of shelves and in a retail store has now been replaced by a worker in the warehouses. And the problem with that development is that the job in the warehouse is much more physically taxing and also sort of socially isolating than the job of the retail sales clerk. It more resembles the work of a factory assembly line worker of years past. The problem is that the warehouse jobs, even now after Amazon bumped them up to $15 an hour a couple of years ago, those jobs are paid less than the assembly line factory jobs of years past, and are, you know, much less sustainable from a sort of a you know, family supporting, career supporting, middle class kind of standpoint. The turnover in the warehouses is about 100%. This is not over the course of a year just what everyone leaves and is replaced. And so it's a much less sustainable kind of work that has been that has now become the mass sort of workforce option for Americans that don't have a college degree, don't have specialized training, and are just looking for a job. This is now their option, but it's both tougher than the retail job and the job of the mall, and also less well paid than the factory job.
We're chatting with Alec McGillis. The book is called Winning and Losing in One-Click America, Fulfillment. One has to admit that the goal of Jeff Bezos in the one-click purchase is nothing sort of extraordinary in terms of a transformation for the consumer. It's just an extraordinary transformation of convenience.
It is. And in this past year, what you saw this past year was consumers embracing that mode of consuming, you know, in an even more extreme form because of the pandemic. So a lot of people who felt
I resisted until the pandemic. That's right. Until the pandemic, I can tell you, Alec, I used to rail against Amazon and do an awful lot of, you know, on the ground local shopping. Also, it's because I can't buy clothes and shoes without trying them on. Like, it's a thing with me. I'll never be able to buy certain things online. But notwithstanding that, I think I bought Allbirds online. That's not true. I bought a pair of shoes online and I like them. But anyway, but generally speaking, but then the pandemic hit and, you know, it was one swipe and they made it so freaking easy on your iPhone. It's like you think of something, they think of it ahead of you and you go, oh, maybe I'd like to look for that. And there's Amazon. One swipe, done. It's unbelievable what they've done.
Yeah, and you know, we embraced it with this incredible alacrity this past year. It was almost became something where it wasn't just that you didn't have to feel guilty about doing it. You suddenly could actually feel kind of virtuous about it. You were flattening the curve, you were bending the curve with your shopping. It was extraordinary that this sort of mindset that took over with the one-click kind of life. And the big question now after this year is whether we kind of move back out of that somewhat and re-engage with the physical world around us with our own towns and communities. And, you know, because if we don't, they're going to wither and there's not going to be much, you know, around anymore. And the fact is that, you know, we think about this convenience that you speak of. It is, you know, it's more convenient to make that one click buy than go to the hardware store 2 miles away And then eventually that hardware store is going to go away, and it will definitely be more convenient to make the one-click buy than to go to the hardware store that's 10 miles away. And
that's true. And so, it's a good point.
It's a vicious circle.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. Okay, I got some questions from listeners here. We're chatting with Alec McGillis, and the book is Fulfillment, Winning and Losing in One-Click America. One question has to do with Jeff Bezos. What else does he dominate? We know he owns the Washington Post. What about the iCloud social media space, Parler, to get rid of Donald Trump? Should one person, basically is the question, be able to have so much power and influence over American society?
That's a very good question. One huge swath of Amazon, of course, their most lucrative part of the company is Amazon Web Services, which is essentially, you know, all these data centers that they own that they've built all around the country to essentially house the cloud. They're renting out cloud space or providing cloud services to all these companies. Netflix, Zoom, all these huge digital companies are now, you know, essentially using Amazon's servers, you know, to put it sort of crudely, for their whole cloud operations. And one of those was Parler, the conservative social media site, and Amazon Web Services, you know, just with a flick of a switch, shut them down.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And you've seen similar now with Amazon, you know, yanking some books off of the retail site that were deemed objectionable by the left, and it does, you know, regardless of what one thinks the Parler or this or that book, it does raise questions about it. The extraordinary dominance that these companies and power that these companies now hold in our country, you know, across all these sectors of life and business. And that's what's at stake now in these looming discussions in Washington over antitrust. There is definitely a debate happening about whether we should rein these companies in and somehow or even somehow break them up, because the level of control they've now acquired is definitely approaching, you know, what was happening in this country in the early 20th century with giants like Standard Oil.
Oh, without even a question, there needs to be antitrust. That is like a self-evident thing. The question is whether or not there's going to be the political will to do it. I don't think there's any debate that it needs to be done, personally, in terms of if you just look at what antitrust was designed to do, which is designed to be able to allow competition to come up through the ranks. When you have so much dominance in these industries by one or two or, you know, players, I mean, it's self-evident. But notwithstanding that, I have a question for you about that, you know, because one of my listeners and I were engaging in a debate and they said, well, you know, Microsoft is bigger than ever, you know, because Microsoft was broken up by the antitrust people. But I argued, yeah, but it took them 20 years to get back to where they were. And in those 20 years, there were a lot of smaller companies that were able to develop and figure out where they could create a competitive niche. So I think that there was value to breaking it up, even though ultimately over time they survived and thrived, which isn't a terrible thing in and of itself. We don't want all companies by any means to go bankrupt, but what we don't want is for them to dominate so much. So, I mean, what do you think about breaking up? What do you think about breaking up Amazon? If you were to envision it, would it be AWS be one and then the Amazon retail consumer be the other? I mean, have people thought about this with any specificity?
They have. There are big debates, you know, in that world about how one might go about it. One option would be, as you said, just basically spin off Amazon Web Services, spin off the cloud part into its own entirely separate company. But that leaves major conflicts that still reside within the retail site itself. One of the big issues that has come up a lot in the hearings that have been held is that Amazon, you know, both of course controls the platform that is the site where so much buying and selling now goes on. The site where all these companies basically feel they have to go to sell their stuff because that's where everyone goes to buy things. And so it controls that site, but then it also is selling goods on the site, both as a retail seller of wholesale goods, and then now also increasingly coming up with goods and selling them under its own private company labels. And so, meanwhile, though, of course, controls all this data. I know it has all the data of what's selling on,
they
on
do.
The site. And so there are inherent conflicts in its role as both platform owner and seller on the site. And so these third-party sellers who come to the site to sell and are just an incredibly lucrative source for Amazon because it just hits them with all sorts of fees and commissions. They're really in a bind selling on that site. They feel like they have to be there, but meanwhile, they're competing against the company that controls the platform. I wanted to ask you about that.
Yeah, we're chatting with Alec McGillis. You actually raise a really good point. One of our listeners is somebody who has an Amazon platform, and she wrote to me, they have so many fees. Did you audit Amazon as part of your research into this group, and does Amazon cheat? Because that's a very big thing for her. She really, you know, wants to know, are they cheating? And you know what I mean? Like, because she feels that right. their disclosure of data is lagging. It's not terribly transparent. Mm-hmm. Sometimes she has to wait. And as you just said, she doesn't know who she's competing against.
Right. No, it's a huge problem for these third-party sellers. I have a whole chapter in the book about this. It's based in El Paso, Texas, and it uses it as sort of example of a companies that are small businesses that are struggling to fend off this Goliath, a bunch of small office supply companies in El Paso, sort of like the Dunder Mifflins of El Paso,
right.
and who feel this extraordinary pressure to sell on the site. And Amazon, in turn, then pressures their usual customers, the businesses and small government, the government offices and school districts in El Paso, to start buying only through Amazon. And basically tells these office supply companies, you better go on the site because your customers are only going to be buying through there. And then they get hit with these huge fees when they're on the site. And it's terrible. And there's been other very good reporting done in the Wall Street Journal and elsewhere on all the you know, these very specific forms of pressure and you know, arguably sort of unfair dealing that Amazon does. Vis-a-vis the small businesses like the caller, what the caller's describing. It's a massive problem, and it's probably, and it has really been at the source of a lot of the hearings that have been held on the big tech companies. Amazon has gotten hit harder on this front and has had, you know, much harder time answering questions on this front than any other. This is definitely a spot where the I think the regulators are going to be looking at.
We have Tom from Fairfield who would like to ask you a question. Tom, you're on the air with journalist Alec McGillis, and the book is called Fulfillment, Winning and Losing in One-Click America.
Oh, thank you, Lisa. You and I know each other. And,
oh, hi, Tom. Lisa, I know you. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And Lisa, I think I've mentioned to you in the past, I have this other business I've been trying to get going, a child safety product, actually, I invented and so forth. And I wanted to give the perspective of what it's like to for a business to do business on an Amazon platform. And it's just it's really kind of shockingly awful in a way. And I think a very big problem. So
go ahead.
Let's say, to use the example, I would need to pay $100 to purchase my product or to make it myself. And then let's say I was trying to sell it for, let's say, $166 to the customer. So I would have that $66 of gross profit to use for all my other expenses and hopefully make a profit I can put in my pocket at the end of it. So let's say, therefore, I'm selling the product that cost me $100. I'm trying to sell it for $166 on Amazon platform. Of that $66 that I would use for all my other expenses, Amazon takes a huge piece of that, really without, and I'm sure they have variable costs, but in a sense, for every additional sale I would make there, I don't see that they have much variable cost, but they take huge fees. They take a 15% commission, if my memory is correct. This fee, that fee, and then if you really want to succeed, it's well known, and you see this on Shark Tank all the time, they refer to it, is you really have to pay substantial marketing fees to Amazon if you want to be pushed up in their algorithm. So
So people see them. Oh, I see. So if I even want to know about your product, Tom, you're paying for me to know about it.
That is just one of the fees. So of that $66, Amazon probably gets more than half of it. And it's just a huge phenomenon that the usual purchaser wouldn't know about.
Alex, exactly, you want to comment on this? Go ahead.
This is exactly, Tom nails it. This is exactly what's happening. And it's massively lucrative for Amazon. It's why they've shifted most of their sites now over to the third-party sellers like Tom would be if he sold on the site. They're well over half the sales on the site are now these, quote, third-party seller sales, where they just get a much bigger cut than if they were selling goods directly, you know, as a retailer selling wholesale goods from a company. They get up to 30, close to 30% often of these sales. Once you add in add up the commission and the fulfillment fees to fulfill the order, and then the marketing fees that sellers feel like they have to pay if they want to get their product noticed. It's been an enormous part of the company's profit and growth in recent years, these kind of sales. And companies feel like they have no choice. Small businesses feel like they have no choice but to
sell. Well, I was going to say, and Tom, I know, is a local lawyer, so, and we're going to have to go because I've already skipped one commercial break. But speaking of commercials, but really the question becomes with my lawyer Lisa hat on is this monopolistic behavior? Because they are the only game in town to, you know, reasonably think that you can digitally sell. And if it's monopolistic behavior, then does it give somebody the legal right or opportunity to go after it? Right. That's the question from a legal point of view. Does it become monopolistic behavior?
I'm thinking the same thing, Lisa. It seems like a big problem. And, you know, the point is not to say that Jeff Bezos is evil. The point is rather to say that this is a problem when the civilization is trying to conduct itself, when you have a phenomenon like this.
Yeah, that's right. And that's the point of the book. And the point of the book as well is to see how the huge impact of Amazon has really affected cities and towns across the country in very unexpected ways. Thank you very much, Tom, for the call. Alec McGillis, thank you very much for being on the show today. I feel like we only touched the surface of this. The book is called Fulfillment, Winning and Losing in One Click America. Say hello to Baltimore for me in my beautiful Sherwood Gardens. It's a gorgeous day.
I will.
And thanks very much for being on the show, and good luck. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
A pleasure. Thank you, Tom, for calling. We'll be right back with more of the Lisa Wexler Show coming up.